Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. We're sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. And Chief, we've got a couple giveaways from the Wolves a little bit later on in the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Team's winning. What could be better than that?
Well, yeah, it just kind of depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, nice night in Calgary. Big, what, 4-1 final?
5-1.
5-1. They look great. They look great. Team's winning. I love when the team wins.
All four lines scored on Thursday night.
Yep.
Every forward had a point except Reese Johnson.
He contributed in other ways.
He did.
Yep.
He did.
Yeah, definitely.
Jonathan Toews wasn't in the lineup.
Yeah.
And they've played well without Patty Kane in the lineup. And then JT misses.
Are you trying to get at something here?
No, I'm foreshadowing what we might be seeing in the not too distant future. But do you think that was more a Calgary thing? Because I didn't think they showed up at all.
I thought Calgary was a mess.
Yeah.
They were
trying to get Daryl Sutter fired.
That's honestly how it looked. And I'm not going to lie. I am rooting for losses at this point, and I might have had a little wager on Calgary. So
I
was angry. I was angry at Calgary during that game. Because, you know, they lost against the Hawks not that long ago in Chicago, and they played much better in that game, but they were disorganized on their own end. Saddle Dome was a crickets in there from the jump, so blame the Calgary fans, I guess, a little bit too. The whole game from Calgary's perspective was ugly. And I liked that the Hawks had they were a little sluggish, I would say, the first 5 minutes or so, and then they started to be like, hey, like, we're in this game, let's go take it. And they did. And Calgary was a mess, and Hawks capitalized on their chances. I thought it was basically an even game throughout, and they cashed in more. So it was ugly hockey, but every once in a while, it's not bad to see a win.
Yeah, and how about Jackson Stauber, who's not exactly high on the organizational depth chart at goalie? This kid started two games, and he's won them both.
I've decided I'm going to learn his name. That's like you get two wins.
And it's an interesting way to spell Jackson.
Yeah.
J-A-X-S-O-N.
It's like a millennial parent kind of name.
It is.
So, but he's looked very serviceable. So, credit to him. I mean, like you said, I mean, he's kind of not quite a Scott Darling path to the NHL, but, USHL, Minnesota high school hockey kid, found his way to Providence College. I think he's undrafted, signed as a free agent. So it's nice. How can you not like a story like that? And to get, I think he was, what they say, the first goalie in 50 years?
Yeah, since 1971, win his first two NHL stars, first Hawks goalie.
For the Hawks, yeah. So, yeah, he's looked good. So, again, like they're perpetually.
That kind of surprises me, by the way, too. It's like, winning your first two starts on good teams, like you're telling me, Antti Niemi never like I
craziness. Like, yeah,
two. It's only two.
Crawford. Crawford walked in.
The Hawks in 2013 went 24 straight games without a loss in regulation. How did? Well, I guess because at that time Crawford and
right
it was probably Emery. It was Emery, Ray Emery, probably.
Razor, yeah, yeah.
So, but it's still two.
Right. Yeah, how do you not get your first his first two NHL starts? But it's not like he hasn't looked out of place. We'll say
no,
that.
No, he hasn't.
He looks like he can be, I don't know about NHL, but definitely a professional goalie for a while. So good for him. Happy for Jackson.
So it was funny because earlier in the week, Gary Bettman went on record about there's no tanking in the National Hockey League.
Okay, Gary.
Right, exactly. And I will say he tried to say more. There's no tanking for players and coaches, which is absolutely right.
Yeah,
I think we all know general managers is a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But I did find it funny that on Thursday night, Hawks, Ducks, and Coyotes all won by multiple goals.
That's one of those moments where it's like if I had a better brain, I would have been like Hawks, puck line, all those teams, parlay them, and then be on a beach somewhere right now.
Like, because, Pat, I can't make it this Saturday.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm sorry. And it's like it is still the NHL. I would also say it's starting to feel a little bit weird. Like, who's a good team in the NHL? Anybody? Like any, there's not a team that's like they're a wagon. Maybe Boston.
Yeah, but Boston for sure, because they're putting up historic numbers, right, and may end up, you know, with the most victories in, right, NHL history and points.
And I think it's because they have a culture and a group of guys that are like, they are pros with Bergeron and Marchand, and they, and Charlie McAvoy has become a, and they have guys that have this culture. They come up, they're professional, they play the right way every night.
And the one time they threw a curveball at that group when they tried to sign the kid with a checkered past that Arizona had,
get him out
that
of here.
Thing was rectified
24
in
24
like,
hours, I
yeah,
think.
And
yeah,
it was done by the players.
Yeah.
It wasn't,
yep,
like, you know, the players forced,
right,
that.
Like, we have a culture here.
Yeah.
And we're going to protect it, and they did. So Boston's awesome. But other than that, it's I watch, it's gotten to the point where I'm at the point of the calendar where football is really kind of over, where I'm watching bits and pieces of basically every game every night. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I don't think anybody is, you know, I know Colorado's hurt. They got a lot of injured guys.
And they're getting them back, some of them in season. So
right,
it's not so, like.
Right. So they might reach that level. But right now it feels like it's Boston and everybody else. So
I like Dallas in the West.
Dallas has looked strong. Vegas, when they're healthy, they seem like they're okay. But they, it's no, but like,
but if there's no juggernauts,
no,
like you just,
and like you like Dallas, but you're not like, whoa, Dallas.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
it's
right,
not like,
right,
it's not like the 2013 Hawks, where it's like they're a buzzsaw every night. So
yeah,
it's a weird year for the NHL. So maybe it's this time of year is when it's dog days, where you can find some of those kind of tanking type teams.
So quickly to just put a bow on our tanking conversation, mm-hmm, you know, the Hawks with 34 points. They're the 31st ranked team. Columbus is still in last, although they've been on a heater. 3-6-1 is definitely a heater for them. Anaheim is a point better than the Blackhawks at 35. Arizona's at 37, and San Jose's at 38. So it's a five team race.
It's a race to the bottom.
San Jose, yeah, Arizona, Anaheim, the Hawks, and Columbus for the worst record.
Yes.
And I think we got to just, because somebody came at me last week after listening to the podcast, which you can get on the ESPN Chicago app, which we highly recommend. All mm-hmm. the shows are there, and it's real easy to access.
That's how my parents listen, actually.
Oh,
they,
really?
They have, so my parents can do it. Bill and Marianne can do it. They're out of town right now.
That's a huge endorsement.
Yeah,
isn't it?
They'll be able, if they can do it, you can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, someone's saying, like, pick a lane. Mm-hmm. Either you're okay with them winning, or, you know, it's all tank all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let me, you do you, you fan it up.
Right.
I'm like, I'm the one sitting in that studio watching this team every GD night.
You don't know what it's like.
I go, you know, so like, I, you know, selfishly, I like something to talk about.
Right.
I mean, there's been some games, that Vancouver game.
Ugh.
I mean, what a, I mean, I should have just, we should have put a color bars and test pattern up and just said, you know what? This one doesn't deserve a post game.
No, it was the type of game that was like, just run that ready to work commercial over and over and over. Just pretend you're in that dark bar, and this old TV is fuzzy. You don't really have to see anything. So that, yeah, like it is nice every once in a while. And it's why I was arguing kind of so hard for Reichel. It's just like, give me a little flavor, a little taste of something that I can look to the future on. And that's kind of where I am now. It's like,
but as we talked last week, do you want him in a meaningless game in Calgary on a Thursday night, or do you want him in a all-situation, meaningful game in the AHL trying to get his team to the postseason?
Well, I think you can make an argument that you can go ahead and put Reichel in every situation on this roster in the NHL level. And then Davidson had a quote that makes sense to me about, hey, like, we want him to learn how to protect leads and, you know, all this could be in a playoff, big games, whatever. I want him to learn how to wrestle a game back. Okay, and there's merit in that too, and there's going to be lots of opportunities to wrestle games back when you're playing for this team and show that, you know, like we talked about with Boston, like they have a culture where it's like they're accountable, they show up to play and win every night, they're never really out of a game because guys are like, I don't care that we're down 2-0, we're not going to lose 5-1. Okay, and I think that there's like, hey, Reichel, go out there and make a play right now, and even if you end up losing 5-1, but if you're working, you know, your butt off 18, 20 minutes a night, I think there's merit and value in that as a learning development arc as well. And I think that's
and there's probably a way to do both, right? It's not like at the AHL level they're playing every other night like they do in the NHL, right. seemingly. I mean, maybe there's you pick pockets on the schedule, like, all right, these three teams, whether you want the ability to have last change at home and really put him in all the situations you want and kind of spoon feed it, or if you're like, you know what, he needs some road work here. Let's see what it's like to go into a hostile barn and try to pull one out.
Yeah, and if you look at guys from his draft class, and you know, every player is different, but Anton Lundell down in Florida, they just threw him in the deep end. Like, he, you know, he's a load, he's a different type of guy, I know all that, but it's like, eventually it's like, can you play or not?
Yeah.
Is it kid gloves or not? And I think, you know, I'd like to see, and I feel the same way about Ian Mitchell too. And I think Mitchell's been pretty good the last 6 weeks or so, but it's like, we're playing St. Louis, so they're a heavier team, so he's not playing tonight.
And I think that's a very telling comment when you hear, like, Luke say that.
Yeah.
You know, he's said that now multiple times.
Yeah.
Like, we're keeping him out. It's a big physical team. You know what? The good teams in this league,
they're big and physical.
Yeah. So that's a pretty big indictment, I think, when you hear that.
Or you could, and again, there were moments last night, like, Ian Mitchell's never going to be a guy who, he's small. He's small and he's, you know, like, kid needs more milkshakes and maybe some more time in the weight room. But he's small and he's a little bit slight, but he positions his body well. And he did so many times last night against Calgary, where he shielded guys off the puck and one, it's almost like a soccer turn kind of thing where it's like you shield the puck and then you spin and go and win battles that way. There's more than one way to skin a cat. Duncan Keith is not a big guy. Like, you can be undersized.
But, I mean, he had tremendous bite. I mean, there was like
bite, and he was a more explosive skater than Mitchell. Mitchell's very smooth. I wouldn't describe him as like an explosive athlete.
But paired with the right guy, I think Ian can have a good career in the National Hockey League. I get for some reason that it's not going to be here. That's just the sense. I mean,
I
know you're the president of his fan club. Yeah. I love the guy. And
it's a nice boy.
I was hoping. You know, most of these guys are.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, reading the tea leaves.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that it's the opportunity is going to be here.
I think you're probably right, and they have, you know, they have a ton of defensive prospects come in and guys that have offensive ability like Korchinski, you know, and I think they like Wyatt Kaiser, and they already have Seth Jones in that spot. So it's like Ian Mitchell ideally is probably a third pair right shot D that runs your second power play or is a guy on the second power play. I'm not saying you have to run your power play through him, but that's would be his role. And I think it's probably, you know, that role might not be here long term. So yeah, his rookie contract is up, I think, after this year. Yes, yeah. It is. And so yeah, it would not surprise me if they dealt him. But I still think he'll play another 8 years in this league.
I do too. I do too. I saw Craig Button say something this week, and I've heard it through a million different scouts and coaches and GMs over the years. It's something to the effect, I've seen many prospects ruined because they've been fast-tracked to the NHL.
Yep.
I've never seen a player ruined because they spent too much time in the AHL.
Yeah, I think that's there's definitely merit to that.
And in this town, where in our recent sample size, there have been more rush jobs and failures, and the GM that has taken over has witnessed that and decided, okay, we've been making rights for the last 10-plus years. We're going to start making a left-hand turn.
Yeah, but there's two sides to every coin, and every prospect is different. Brandon Saad threw him right in.
Yes.
You know, like he's
also playing with two Hall of Famers.
True, but like, so he's insulated a little bit, but also there's responsibility that comes with that too.
Yeah.
And he's a horse. He's a big boy. And which Reichel's not and Mitchell's not. But like, I do think that you could, I don't know. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think it's time for Reichel, but we'll see. I'm sure after the deadline, he'll get another taste and then probably send him back down for a playoff.
All right. We got a great show coming up. I got a chance to talk to Kyle Davidson this week, talk about Kane, Taves approaching that trade deadline. We'll get the latest from Kyle Davidson. We got Sharpie coming up at the bottom
of the handsome one.
The handsomest one.
I wonder if he gets tired of that. Maybe we'll ask him.
Yeah. Well, why would you?
He's more than just a pretty face. He can do more than just look pretty.
The quote of the year on ESPN 1000, as far as I was concerned, came from Barstool Chief, and you were doing a show with Peggy Kaczynski, and you were talking about your New Year's resolutions, and yours simply was to be less gross.
It's not working. That's not working. I had
to be less gross.
Yeah, so, I mean, I got a Peloton. I'm actively trying to be less gross. I eat pretty healthy. I'm in a weight loss challenge with the 108 guys. They're a White Sox fan group. They have a really funny podcast and website. And I recently, since I've gotten the Peloton, I've actually gained weight. And I'm eating
Maybe it's muscle.
That's what I'm telling myself. The hockey legs are coming back.
You know when you really start working out, the muscle weighs more than fat. All right.
That's
it. Where's this thing melting off? By the other, it's so cheap, too. Like, I do have the Peloton situation as well. But you, start getting on the instructors. And you're this guy's way too positive.
Yeah.
I need someone barking at me, telling me I'm gross.
Right.
Be less gross. Pedal faster. Be less gross.
Well, it's Heart Cycle. It's Heart Cycle TM. It's my $1 million idea where we're basically just going to play the Herb Brooks from Miracle, where he's just being like, you're not looking too good for that brunch right now. Like, get on the line.
Again.
Like, do it again. And just insult me in between making me do hard stuff. And I think that's the only
way. So who do you like? Who's your go-to instructor?
I like that
Alex Toussaint.
He told me to wipe that bleeping smile off my face. I'm like, first of all, I was not smiling. But
you're like, is there a camera in here?
I think there actually
he
is.
He can't see me.
I think he might be able to. But because I think there's cameras on Pelotons. No, I don't know. But that one, I was like, all right, like this is the guy for Heart Cycle. He can be our coach.
All right, more Peloton talk coming up. We got Patrick Sharp at the bottom of the hour, and we're giving away 2 4-packs of tickets to the Chicago Wolves taking on their division rival, the Iowa Wild, on Friday, February 10th. It's the final $3 beer night of the season. You don't want to miss out on that. Keep listening over the next few weeks for future games like Saturday, February 18th. Star Wars night versus the Cleveland Monsters. And on this night, it is... Oh, Rockford IceHogs.
Ooh, baby.
It's superhero night. Special superhero night ticket packages are available at ChicagoWolves.com. So that's tonight. They return from a long road trip, and they're going to host Rockford at Allstate Superhero Night. So right now... We're taking the third caller at 312-332-3776. You're getting one of those 4 packs of tickets to the Chicago Wolves taking on the Iowa Wild on Friday, February 10th. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're coming right back after this.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. The Hockey Show.
Pat Boyle hosts Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
We're back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Barstool Chief Pat Boyle with you every Saturday at 1 o'clock. By the way, for the hockey geeks out there, I know you know this. ESPN 1000 has a new voiceover person, and you just heard her bring us in. Do you know where you hear that voice each and every week?
I believe that's Hockey Night in Canada.
Hockey Night in Canada, baby. That's right. To find the talent, you got to find somebody that is connected to hockey. And now we've reeled her in, and she is now the new voiceover person here.
It reminds me of that feeling when you were playing in some tournament, like a Can-Am or something like that, and you got to play on the Lake Placid ice or play in some big arena, a big college rink. You're like, man, I feel like kind of a boss right now. Like, I might be actually awesome.
Right.
But it's like, no, like, you're just playing with the bells and whistles. they just brought in all the bells and whistles, but you don't really deserve it.
All right, so you posed the question on social media a couple days ago. Guys you think could be an effective player somewhere on a future Blackhawks playoff team.
Mm-hmm. On this current roster. So top of the list, Patrick Kane. keep going. Yeah,
he's not. He honestly didn't make your list.
Yeah, he was on the next trip.
Kurashev is in the leadoff spot. Radish is here as well. Sam Lafferty, Seth Jones, and of course your guy.
My boy, Ian Mitchell. Which we already talked about that. If he has a future here or not, probably not. But the other four, I think, could be good players on good teams. And I think Kurashev is becoming a pretty good two-way player with some offensive ability. Radish looks like a pretty good hockey IQ. He's got nice size to him, good shot. Not the fastest guy in the world, but that's okay. And if you could find me a third line center to play in between those. I think that could be a pretty good third line in the NHL. They're playing probably over slot right now. Jones, I think, is a perfect probably second pair guy as you go along.
Like on a good team, you think he's a three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I thought a two on a good team, but I'll hang with you.
Yeah, a two or a three. If you're winning a cup, we'll say that. Like that's okay. To me, that's always the prism that you want to be like one of the top four teams. Okay.
Right.
Like if you look at the top four teams around the league, I would say that Jones is typically the second or maybe third best if you were to put him on that
totally
team.
Agree.
So, and I love Seth Jones.
And he's been on a roll since he was named in the All-Star game.
Yeah, he's been. I honestly think it was a little bit of just getting healthy. And I also don't think we've seen peak Seth Jones because we haven't seen the peak of anybody because this team is not very good.
I think it's his quicker shot. Finally,
yeah.
He's not. It's just getting pucks to the net and I don't know. It seems like he's got. I think I saw over his last 10 games, his shooting percentage is 12%.
Oh, that's pretty high.
Yeah, that is pretty high. So it's probably going to come back down a little
pretty high for a defenseman. That's like a good number for like to break it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it's kind of high, but I love Seth Jones. I don't have any, you know, issues with that trade or anything. Still at this point, I think he'll be a foundational piece, a guy you can count on for 25 plus minutes a night. So I like him, but yeah, if you're winning a cup, I would hope that you would have at least some guys as good as him. And Lafferty, I don't know if he'll be here or if any of these guys will be here
think Lafferty has some value up there. Maybe I'm...
No, I think there's a lot of teams who would line up and be like, yeah, we'll take him. And then you might be underwhelmed by the offer. And then at that point, you're better off just keeping. Like, if you... I've talked about this
like before. Would you think at best a second round, but probably realistically a third round for him?
Yeah, and if you're getting
a third round, like why not just keep him, right?
Right, because if you draft a guy in the third round, you are praying on your knees that that third round pick becomes as good as Sam Lafferty.
Yeah,
and you're just kicking the can down the road,
right.
It's like one in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of thing. So I like Lafferty, but again, like on a really good team, you want him on the fourth line and not. You know, I mean, he's been getting some top 6 minutes on this team at different junctures of the year, and that's just not him.
Right.
And it's not a slight. Like, he's a very good player, but he's just not. That's not what he is. So, but I like him. I hope he's here in 2-3 years when this team is, you know, competitive again.
So earlier in the week, had an opportunity to sit down with General Manager Kyle Davidson. He joined us on the pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, and got right to it. You know, the topic everybody wants to get to is the future of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. And we asked him, you know, when he'll talk to 88-19 and their agent, Pat Brisson. Here's what Kyle had to say.
Whether we're approaching the deadline or not, I think it's always healthy to have a pulse of your locker room and chat with your leadership group, no matter the circumstances. But I think we plan on meeting the next couple of weeks here to get a sense of where everyone's at, you know, how they're feeling as we approach the deadline, and then, you know, constant communication with Pat, and, you know, not only just on Patrick and Jonathan, but he's got a lot of clients, and so we're always talking about how the guys are doing, how they're feeling, and then, you know, obviously specifically on Patrick and Jonathan, we'll get in person with them shortly.
Here's Kyle Davidson on what he expects to get from those talks with Pat Brisson, Patrick Kane, and Jonathan Toews.
It's just kind of honest dialogue where we see the team, what our plan is, and what we kind of want to do moving forward, and then get their thoughts on that, and get their thoughts on what they intend to do, because they're in full control of their destinies as you know, they've earned the right to be, and so. You know, just want to get a sense of where they're at, what they think about the team, and what their wishes are moving forward. So we'll get a better sense of that in short order.
When we had Patrick and Jonathan Toews in the interviews on this show over the last 2 weeks, you and I won't speak for you. I got the sense that 88-19 were still thinking about this, mm-hmm. and picturing the options and how they're going to fit and when they want to, you know, pull the trigger on that, how late they, you know, do you pick a team now that's won 8 in a row and in the middle of the playoff hunt, but in late February they've fallen off and they're in danger of making the playoffs? You know, so I kind of got the impression, especially from Taves, that you know, he doesn't know what he wants, but he's they both are prepared to leave.
Well, and this is the thing where I'm starting to get a little annoyed with this because it's like, hey, we're going to talk mid-February again. Go down the street to Fifth Third or walk upstairs and just figure out, like, if I'm Jonathan Taves and I'm trying to decide what I want to do the rest of this year, I would want to say, hey, Kyle, I haven't decided if I want to leave at the deadline or not, but let's say I don't. Am I going to get offered a contract? Because that might change the way I'm viewing how the next month or so and the rest of the season. Because if I'm not getting a contract in the summer, well, then I might as well just leave now. And that's
the honest dialogue that needs to happen, right?
How has it not happened yet?
Yeah, it probably sort of already has.
Right. Then I would say, just say that. Like, what is...
Well, okay, so when we had the interview with Patrick Kane, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he said at one point in his answer, I got to find out if we are part of their plan.
Right.
So to me, at that point, it didn't seem like the message was sent to him that, like, you know what? If you want to stay here, you'll always we'll always have a stall for you.
Right. And it could be, then it becomes like, what's the term and what's the number? And maybe you don't agree on that. Okay. And that's fine. And, you know, the organization has to do the best, but at some level you have to be able to look at somebody and just be like, look, we love you, we want you here, let's see if we can work out a deal, or we love you, do you want to go somewhere? And just say what you're thinking and keep it. It should, to me, it's not like we're going to talk again in 2 weeks. It feels like it should be like a weekly check-in, and I don't know, it's bizarre. And again, like, I'm not a general manager, I'm not sitting in that seat, I'm not Taves or Kane, obviously. But to me, like, I am like a very forward, open communicator, and it seems like good business on the surface to be like, here is everything that's on the table for you. Which way do you want to go?
All right. So Jeff Merrick had a report on Hockey Night in Canada last week where he said that Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves were going to make their decision in mid-February.
Mm-hmm.
That at that point they would decide which teams they would go to, mm-hmm. waive their no trade clause to accept the deal with. And that was kind of the timeline that Jeff put out there. And of course, he's not putting that out there out of thin air. So I asked Kyle Davidson if his timeline matches the one that Merrick reported.
We don't really have anything mapped out specifically, that's for sure. But logically, I think around that time would make sense. You have to give some buffer in the event there is interest in exploring what's out there, and so you've got to give yourself some time. And I think that would be around the period in which we would want to have an answer one way or another. Yeah.
So it does sound like we've got another, and again, they're off for a week after they play tonight in Edmonton.
Yep.
They don't play again until a week from Tuesday. So we'll be well into February and probably a week to 2 weeks away from mm-hmm. deadline day.
And I don't know what is going to change in a week or two. Do they not have Kyle's number? Do you want to facilitate that? Do you have Kyle's number?
I don't. Okay. I do have Kyle's.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
I mean,
do.
Just pass it along to Taves and Kane so that we can
I got Kane's number, too. I can make sure that everybody's got
Do me a favor. Put us, all four of us, on a group chat, and we'll get to the bottom of this.
I will
because
do that.
Because that, to me, is like, let's just work it out. Let's just work it out. And
you've got more of a chance of having Alex Toussaint come to your condo and put you, strap you into your Peloton and ride with you than I have.
Well, I just need you to vouch for me. Just be like, he's all right. He's all right.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. So I, and again,
a little quirky. He's a great guy.
We talked about this too, where it's like the long breakup thing, where it's back and forth and back and forth. And I feel like that's where we are. Like, all right, just tell me, do we have a future or not? And for Kane to not know at the time of that interview whether or not they want him for next year, it just seems impossible to me. And borderline, I hate to say it, but disrespectful. Like, if Kane has to be asking himself that, do they even want me? That's not good. That's not what you want for your guy that's going to have a statue and has all the cups and has done everything for this organization, bringing back this this city to being a hockey city again. Like, he did that. And I think you owe him a little bit.
I don't disagree with you on that front.
But he also might know and just be playing poker.
Yeah. Coming up next, Patrick Sharp joins the show. We're going to give another four pack of tickets away to the Chicago Wolves taking on their division rival, Iowa Wild. It's Friday, February 10th. Final $3 beer night of the season. Be the third caller at 312-332-3776. And you, we're going to the Wolves game on February 10th. Patrick Sharp joins the party. How about February 10th and number 10? Coming up next on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief
on the AM at 1000, on the FM at 100.3 HD2, on your phone through the ESPN Chicago app.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
D-O-double-G. It is The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Blackhawks taking on the Oilers tonight. 9 o'clock face-off on NBC Sports Chicago. They'll be in the house that McJesus built. Connor McDavid get to see his unbelievable talent on display. Chris Bosters will be on the call along with our next guest on The Hockey Show, the one and only three-time Stanley Cup champion, Patrick Sharp. Sharpie, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. What an intro. I like your guys' sound effects and tunes. It's
Tried to get some Pearl Jam for you, but it wasn't in rotation yet.
Yeah, we'll stick to the hip-hop. That's okay. All good. We're here in Edmonton. I played my last year. This building was just popping up, and the area around the building was unfinished, so a couple years later, I'm back, and there's a lot going on here in Edmonton in the Ice District. It's kind of fun to be here.
I think that's the first time anyone's ever said that.
Yeah, I mean, it is snowing, and I think it's like just about 0 degrees right now, and I haven't left the hotel room all day.
It looks fun from your hotel room. It looks nice.
Outside the window, it looks fun for somebody.
Okay. All right. Well, great. And you're the road warrior. You're just the guy they call up for the road trips, huh?
I guess. I mean, I've done a few games at the United Center, but when I looked at the schedule and talked with my bosses at the Hawks, I kind of chose the games that worked out best, and I got my brother out here in Calgary, so it worked out good that I could jump on the Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton trip, see some family, saw Brent Seabrook in Vancouver, and be able to call some Hawks games while we're doing it.
Little known fact, when you were named MVP of the All-Star game, you got a car, right?
That's right.
And you gave it to your brother, right?
Well, somebody got the car. I gave it to my bro, and he gave it to his wife, and then they got divorced shortly after that, so I'm not really sure what happened to the vehicle.
Wasn't a good car.
Sorry I opened up that can there. What did you make of the effort the other night in Calgary? I thought it was one of their better games of the season, and it looked like they raised their game, and I know Johnny was out with a non-COVID-related illness. We saw the team kind of step up when Patrick was dealing with some stuff a couple weeks ago. Is that a natural tendency, you think, for a team to try to raise their game collectively when one or two of their leaders is out of the lineup?
It sure seems like it. Didn't they rattle off three games in a row with Kaner out of the lineup, right? And, I mean, I had the score almost right last night. I thought it was going to be 5-2 for Calgary. It ended up being 5-1 for the good guys. So, you know, I was completely wrong on how the game was going to turn out. But Chris and I were doing it in the first period, and we were kind of looking at each other like the fans are just sitting there, haven't made a sound the whole first period. The Flames were not playing very good. And I think the Hawks played a strong game the way that they need to play with the group that they have. They played very simple. I wonder how much Johnny being out of the lineup hurts, and then the youngster Jackson Stauffer just getting a second start. I mean, they protected him pretty well. There's a lot of shots, but you know, I can't think of too many really dangerous prime scoring chances that the Hawks gave up. So it was fun to watch. Some well-balanced scoring. I think every forward had a point, with the exception of Reese Johnson, and he was in front of the net for one of the goals and played well in an area that he grew up in. So it was a fun game. It's always way more fun traveling with the team after a win. I know I've kind of separated myself from the wins and losses a little bit, but I still get pumped when the Hawks win and see some smiles on these guys' faces getting on and off the plane, because it's a grind, and when you're losing and maybe not scoring as much as we'd like, it's, it can wear on you. But guys seem to be pretty happy yesterday.
Yeah, it is nice to get a win every once in a while. Obviously, the big news and the thing everybody talked about is 1988 and when they're departing and all that. Do you kind of talk to them and be like, hey, it's not that good to leave?
I'm trying to sell them on Chicago.
Yeah.
Tell them things about the city that they don't know yet.
Right.
I honestly, Chief, I haven't asked them a question about their situations all season long. And I really don't plan on doing it. It's kind of weighing over my head when I watch the team. Like, it's the biggest news that's probably going to happen all season if it does happen. And I'm just kind of staying out of it. I'm listening to the reports and following the season. And, you know, we'll deal with that when we deal with it. But a lot of people ask me because I'm around the team and I played a few years with those guys. But trust me, I got no inside information on what they're thinking or which direction they're leaning. But that'll be something to talk about if and when it does happen.
Well, what was it like when you left? Did you feel like, man, like this is not what I envisioned, and Chicago is, I don't know, maybe give you a fresh perspective on what it's like to be in the league on one of these other teams?
Well, when I went to Dallas, it was great, but I got to blame myself for those 2 years that I was there. I wasn't really in probably the best mindset to be there. I was 35 years old. My career was winding down. We had just started a family, had two kids, won our third Stanley Cup in Chicago. I didn't really want to pick up and leave. And I had roots in the city. I loved it there and planned on living there as I got older. So it was a tough 2 years being away, but there was a lot to offer in Dallas. When I look back on it, we had a great group of guys. Our team was awesome the first year. We got hit with a bunch of injuries year two, but you know, it's there's a lot of great places to play, but I can't speak for Taser and Kane, but I know they love the Hawks and they love the city, and them more than anybody that was on those great teams. I mean, they've been there since day one and been the face of the group for as long as they've been there. So it's a lot to take in, your own individual situation. And I knew the situation in 2015 that just like 2013 and 2010, after the season, there was going to be some cap restraints, a little different situation than this, but it weighed on me a little bit in 2015. You know, I wonder how those guys are dealing with it every day. We were in Calgary last game and saw that they were getting grilled by the Canadian media, answering all kinds of questions on it. So, you know, it is what it is, but it's still fun to see them playing now. I mean, Taner had a pretty strong game.
Oh, his game was awesome.
He was great.
Wasn't it great? Like,
yeah.
Making those little nuanced plays that we've come to love him make. I mean, players don't seem to do that a whole lot, but a couple great backhand passes and brings back some great memories of watching him do his thing.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion Patrick Sharp joins us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle. So Sharp, you'll be behind the mic with Vosters tonight, NBC Sports Chicago, pregame at 8:30. It was weird seeing you in green in Dallas. It was weird seeing Duncan Keith in the oil can sweater. But that's reality. This is a business. And I said it to Chelios the other night on the pregame show. You can always come back. He proved that, right? With the way he left here, went to Detroit, won cups. You can always come back to the organization and be accepted. Do you look at your decision to come back for that final year with the Blackhawks to end your career in that jersey as one of the best decisions you made in your career?
Yeah, it meant a lot to me personally. I think it was that was the year that Corey was injured at Christmas time and didn't play the second half of the year. And then we lost him as our starting goaltender. The year kind of went downhill, but personally, it was fun to be back with the guys. And Haas was gone. Nick was in Arizona, I believe. So it wasn't quite the same, but I enjoyed the year. And you'll go to the United Center, you see legacy nights and jerseys retired and all that stuff. And I got a chance to live that in real time. My final game at the United Center was great. There was like a standing ovation and waving to the crowd. I couldn't believe it. It was like a great way to cap it all off. And I just know personally at that time, I was just running out of gas physically, mentally. I was kind of over the grind of playing and wasn't at my best that final year. But to finish with the Blackhawks jersey on was special to me. And I look back on how it all ended. It was where I wanted to be. And then, of course, going right into the broadcasting the following year with the team. So it was all good. And, you know, we see a bunch of guys leave and come back. And I know that when I became a UFA, Chicago was a spot that I wanted to end up in for sure.
Do guys embrace the mentor role? It seems like you kind of took DeBrinket that year, his rookie year, under your wing. Is that something that's attractive to older players? Is it more of like I guess this is my role now kind of thing? Like you do it begrudgingly.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it, Chief. It's like, I guess I'm the old guy now. I got to take some youngster here and teach him a few things. But, you know, Alex was very nice to say that a few times publicly, that I helped him a little bit that first year for him, but I don't even really remember doing much to him. I just liked him right away in training camp. I knew he was a kid that cared a ton about hockey. There were some doubts about his size, just like there is with every kid that's that size, but he was awesome in training camp. We were put on a line together in game one against Pittsburgh. Remember we slapped Pittsburgh around that game, like 10-1 or something like that. And DeBrincat got an assist and then he scored in Montreal a couple games later. I like the fact that he loves hockey and he wanted to be the best that he could be, still does. So he was an easy guy to kind of chum up with and hang around, but I didn't really look at myself as a mentor. I was still too worried, Chief, about scoring goals. That wasn't happening.
You and Burrish used to have some fun playing pranks on Kane and Taves back in the day. Now you've taken Chris Foster's under your arm. I liked your chirp the other day about him being a little late for the team bus as a rookie broadcaster. Can't have that happening.
He's getting the what for lately. Jeez.
I mean, this guy, Foster, you'd think that he was Kane or Tate's. Like, why doesn't he just go sit at the back of the plane or, you know, start playing at the card table on the bus? I mean, this guy walks around missing bus times and he hasn't been late to anything, but boy, he's living in his own world. So, you know, thought maybe play the veteran role a little bit, slap him around on TV. But he's having fun, and I know he's new to hockey, and he's getting started with the Hawks as well. But I think he calls a good game, and he's learning a ton, asks a lot of questions. And he's a fun guy to be around. Nothing really seems to bother him, and he's starting to make me laugh more and more when I'm with him. So, you know, I'm looking forward to doing more games with Chris and kind of building that chemistry, and hopefully we can sound better on the air.
Well, it's definitely been building, and you guys are having some fun, which it's always nice on the viewer's side when you hear two people laughing. Hey, thanks for doing this, Sharpie. We will we'll talk to you on TV later tonight in Edmonton, okay?
Sounds good, guys, and we'll see you when we get back to Chicago.
It's Patrick Sharp joining us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Back to wrap things up after this.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000. The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. On the AM at 1000. On the FM at 100.3 HD2. On your phone through the ESPN Chicago app.
Back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Thanks to Patrick Sharp for joining us on the show. Thanks to our producer, Kendra Smith. Thanks for calling in and winning those Chicago Wolves tickets to take on Iowa Wild on February 10th. Tonight we get to see Connor McDavid. If I said to you, don't blink.
Yeah.
No, I know.
He's unbelievable.
He's made every D-man look silly at times.
There's never been anybody like him. He's the fastest. He might be the most dominant athlete in all sports.
Is he being wasted the most? As far, I mean, Mike Trout, you could say, has been wasted in Anaheim. Yeah. But
the Mike Trout thing, certainly. But I do think it's Connor McDavid's still going to play 22 minutes a night. Mike Trout's going to field four or five balls maybe and then have four or five at-bats. It's not exactly – like, McDavid is a bigger waste, if you ask me, and it's a shame because they made a little run last year. They ran into Colorado, who's just a much better, deeper team. But he has done – every time that he's been in the playoffs, he's done his part. Even that bubble series against the Hawks, he would have 3 points a game, it felt like, and then it just still wasn't enough.
I don't
enough.
Know how they didn't win that series.
I mean,
you're playing – and maybe the pressure playing in Edmonton. I mean, obviously the bubble's a whole weird
thing.
It was
weird, yeah.
To begin with. But, all right, prediction final score tonight. You were a little off on Thursday. Right.
Yeah, I was.
And you've had some issues. Hopefully,
way off.
Your washer and dryer's rectified. Hopefully, you and Alex have a nice ride.
Yeah,
and he's saying the right things to you through the magic
get me,
of that
get me
bike.
Motivated. Yep. And yeah, so I think look, you got to go back to the well. I think it's you're on a road trip. You're playing against McDavid. Sometimes he just decides I'm going to win the game by myself, and he can. And there's nobody that can stop him. Certainly not. Not Chicago. So I think we're going to be – it's one of those things where it's like when you have a player like that and you have an opportunity to watch him, you should watch greatness. And you should tune in tonight to watch Connor McDavid. And then hopefully you have a few surprises by the Blackhawks too.
And hopefully you tune in at 8:30 for the pregame show with Kaylee Chelios, Colby Cohn, and myself on NBC Sports Chicago. Chief, mm-hmm. I won't see you next week because I'm going to be in Mexico.
Good for you.
But
I guess I'll just do this by myself.
I'm glad I'm telling you this on the air. But we're finally on a little bit of a bye. I need a little break.
All right.
I need a little break. So
hour a week is just too much.
It's just too much. No, I need a break from watching this hockey team for a little bit and talking about the 8-19 and the trade deadline and all that. We'll do that. You'll do that next week. We'll see you next time on the Hockey Show. White Sox Weekly is coming your way next.
Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief
on the AM at 1000, on the FM at 100.3 HD2, on your phone through the ESPN.